Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
Ready for that?
Never mind. Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Hey, this is the wrestling podcast where we talk about the wrestling you grew up with. We talk about the wrestling you're watching today. And we talk about the life and times of Heath Mulligan and Mark Whitman.
Because people seem to care.
They actually do. They actually do. And we're going to start a new segment today just called Catching Up with Heath and Mark. So, Mark,
I don't know what to catch up about.
Well, I mean, we had, you know, one of your friends suffered a great loss. We just want to send
To Josh Kreutzer, my sympathy. The Kreutzer family. Like, Josh lost his mom, and so I'm not going to say much more about it than that. I want him to know, my sympathies and condolences, and I dedicate this episode to the memory of Ann Kreutzer.
Yeah, and your post
great
on
woman.
Yeah, I did not know her, but your post on Facebook about her was just, dude, it was great. It was really good. So absolutely,
That's the truth, man. And I could say that about most of my friends' mothers.
Yeah,
at some point in life, I was tired and they let me sleep under their roof, and I was hungry and they let me eat at their table.
Or my mom let you sleep under the pool table.
Under the pool table, that's right.
So anyway, yeah, thoughts and prayers out to their family, absolutely. Mark, I wanted to tell you a story of, I haven't told you this, I wanted to save it for the air. Okay. I haven't told anybody this.
I like this. What was her name?
Mark, I got Jenna Jameson's phone number. No. As most of you know, the Star Wars movie is coming out. My kids have not seen the Star Wars movie. I have planned out the order we're going to watch them in. My kids don't know a lot about Star Wars, and we're getting ready to educate them. So Drake's been wanting to see this movie, and it came on TV the other night. So we're watching it together. And we get to a scene, and this guy and this girl are talking, and the guy's talking about how much he loves movies, and that's what he wants to do. He wants to do movie soundtracks, and he talks about, man, the soundtrack of this movie is just awesome. And the girl's like, well, I don't really watch movies. Like, how do you not watch movies? She's like, well, I watch movies. And then she says, Bruce Willis is a ghost, da-da-da-da-da, Darth Vader is Luke's father, and Drake's jaw hit the floor. And he looks at me and goes, oh, spoiler alert.
There you go.
What?
What?
And I just remember sitting there looking at him. And I'm like, what? What just happened? And he paused the movie and he said, what did she say? I said, what do you mean? What did she say? She's like, Darth Vader is Luke's father? That's what you've been trying to keep from us? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, Drake. It's like, she just said it. How is Darth Vader Luke's father? And so up until this moment right now, I was so disappointed because I wanted Drake to see the part in Empire Strikes Back and be blown away.
Right.
But I'm still glad I got that moment. I mean, we got a moment where he was completely blown away.
But that, of the spoiler alerts that could happen, isn't that like the least of the spoiler alerts that you could give?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, that's the thing that I thought everybody knew, even if they hadn't seen the movies. I thought everybody kind of knew that.
Well, here's the thing.
I forget he's a child.
Right. Yes. Well, no, but I mean, I have tried to protect that.
Right.
Like, if you haven't watched the Star Wars movies, if you're just going and all you're seeing is the toys or cartoon commercials, they don't allude to it. Mm-hmm. If you've grown up in the Star Wars lore, it's ingrained in you.
That's true. I guess so.
But for Drake, it was just like...
Go ahead. No, you go.
But it made
your
him...
story.
But so... It was this bad. He's like, well, now I don't have to watch the movies.
Oh.
But now I want to watch the movies.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing. And I think we're less than 70 days until the Force Awakens. Yeah,
Crystal and I were talking about that the other day. Just that, because my take on things is, we were actually talking about horror movies. We're both big horror movie
fans,
my wife and I. We watch a lot of horror movies, and it's October, and it's horror movie month, and there's a group of people that they're not just horror fans, but Star Wars fans and comic book fans and wrestling fans who get so offended at these when they reboot these things and they make changes to people's origins and they change stuff around a little bit. And I'm not like that.
Yeah.
Like I don't care. I don't get caught up on the color of somebody's lightsaber. Well, wait a minute. No, it was supposed to be this. I just don't care enough to. And maybe it's because I've I have other things that I pursue in life.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't care enough to get caught up in those conversations. So when they reboot horror movies, like the conversation we were having was about the Halloween movie versus the remake and how people didn't like the remake.
Because it
changed a little bit about Michael Myers' origin story.
Yeah.
And my take on it was, I'd read an article when it first come out, and I've always kind of thought the same thing. The movie, the Halloween movie previous to the Rob Zombie relaunch or reboot or whatever you want to call it, had Tyra Banks and Busta Rhymes in it. So you could have either got another Michael Myers movie with Tyra Banks and Busta Rhymes or whoever the famous rapper and the reality TV star that they could have chosen to be in the sequel to that one. Or you could have got a fresh take on the character.
Yeah.
That it still was a character that you love.
Right.
But maybe, everything's not perfect about the origin of it. My wife actually prefers the Rob Zombie version to the original. I don't, but she prefers it because it is basically, have you seen it? I'm sure you haven't, but
I've seen a couple of the Halloween movies. I don't know that I've actually seen the very first one.
Okay, well, that's the best of them. You need to go see it. But the reboot of it that Rob Zombie did is like the inside the mind of what makes a sociopath.
So,
the first hour of the movie is like this is the environment that you would raise a sociopath in.
So okay, that raises a question. Let's talk about this, because back in the day, whether it was Jason or Freddy or Michael Myers, the movie just kind of started,
right?
And it's, here's this crazy guy, and he's killing people. And he's got supernatural strength or whatever, but he is crazy. Don't mess with him.
Right.
Whereas
he can't be reasoned with. You know.
Whereas now it's like, well, we need to understand.
Right. We need to understand why.
Because he is a victim in all of that.
And that is, there is some truth to that. And we went from, there's this moment, we had no intention of talking about horror films.
No, I love it.
But there's this thing that happened with horror around the time that those slasher flicks came along, where you saw everything from the victim's perspective.
Yeah.
And then there was this switch that happened with the first Halloween, where you began to see a lot of things from the perspective of the killer. And you see his point, it was big at the time. The opening scene of Halloween is a mask going on, and you see first person view of a knife or a pair of scissors in young Michael Myers' hand, and you see him walk in, and everything shot from his point of view, and that was groundbreaking at the time, to put yourself in the killer's position.
Yeah.
Instead of being in the, wait, what's going on? Where's the guy? Where's he? And you know what I mean?
But isn't that kind of what they did with Jaws?
Sort
of. Because a lot of Jaws, you see it from the shark's point of view.
From the shark's perspective. That's very true. But that was a shift that happened in horror. And I don't know that it's for the best. We're like, basically now with horror, it's, here's this cast of characters that's, they're very stereotypical. This is the jock. This is the slut. This is the smart girl.
Yeah.
This is the, you know, whatever. This
the
is
geek. The
stoner. This is the geek. And you kind of know what order they're going to die in.
Right.
And they're set up to be
the minority.
Right. And it's set up that way. And you pull for the bad guy. There's a new Friday the 13th game that's supposed to be coming out next year, where you will actually, there'll be two storylines, I think. One, you'll play as the victim trying to survive, but there's the Jason mode, where you will be the one stalking the camp, committing the murders. And that's was kind of a weird, disturbing thing.
I don't know that that's where our society needs to go. So let me ask you this, okay? So we have gone from the horror movies we grew up with. Mm-hmm. It is black and white. These are the good guys or the victims. Uh-huh. This is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And these people, despite their stupidity, uh-huh, are going to try to come together, uh-huh, and kill and stop this evil, uh-huh, this truly evil bad guy.
Right.
Whereas today the movies are, well, we need to understand his motives.
Right.
And let's not judge anyone.
Especially the Friday the 13th movies, where Jason is a very sympathetic character. If you look at his backstory and
right,
his history and his motivation for doing what he's doing, he's a very sympathetic figure. Even though he's this hulking brute. But you're
yes,
not.
Yeah,
you admittedly, no. Oh, I've seen a few of them. I've seen them all several right, times. And he's very much sympathetic, this mentally challenged young man who was picked on and bullied and drowned, and his mother was killed, and he saw it. And I mean, yeah, it's just, you know.
Yeah. But once he took care of those responsible.
Right. But there's this, the whole sex equals death thing in those movies.
True. Yeah.
Because originally the camp counselors were out, they were frolicking, shall we say, and they weren't watching the children. And then it becomes this obsession with him that when people, if you watch the whole movies, sex equals death in all the Friday the 13th movies.
Ah.
The virgin girl. The girl who's the virgin always survives in horror movies.
Wow.
For the most part. And there's the theory being that everybody else is preoccupied with drinking and having sex and doing drugs, and she's not. She doesn't have that preoccupation.
Yeah.
And her mind, because she's not hung up worried about that, she sees what's going on around yeah, her, and she's her perception of events allows her to go ahead.
That's a pretty good societal observation, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely, man. She's not worried about everything that everybody else is worried about. She's worried about being the best her that she can be and maintaining her virtue. And she typically survives the film. It's very rare for the virgin female to not survive to the end of the film and be the one to stop the killer. If you watch, I mean, there are examples, obviously, where they turn things on their ear and she's the yeah, first one to die. I mean, there are those movies that are ironic about that stuff.
Aren't they making a new Scream movie? What did you think of the Scream movies?
I liked them. They were okay. The first one was good.
Yeah, because I thought
it was more of a thriller than a horror.
Right, because I think the third one's the only one I saw in the theaters. And I took Karen, and I just remember just being, okay, well, yeah, why are we
the third
here?
One this was not that great. The
but I just, I, like, for me, I was like, okay, I probably should have just rented this. I felt bad taking my wife to see it because I was like, well, I got to see how this story ends, knowing, okay, they're going to end up making 10 of these.
Did you see the first one?
Yeah, I saw them all.
Okay, so you knew.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to see the third one in the theaters because I didn't see the first two, I wanted to see.
I got you. I thought you meant, I want to see how it ends, and I haven't seen the first two.
No.
Joe's like, why didn't you go back from the beginning?
No. I'd seen those.
No, I thought they were good. I mean, I didn't think they were great, but I thought
right,
they were good.
They're not ground.
And I watched them recently because they were on Netflix, and I was just looking for something to do, so I went through and watched a couple of them. I watch movies now, not necessarily in one sitting, especially if I've seen them. I watch like 45 minutes and then go do what I got to do.
Yeah. So can I ask you this? To me, especially the Scream movies, did they make that a lot more complicated than it needed to be?
Don't we do that?
By the time we get to that third movie, it could have just been this simple, here's two crazy kids and they're just doing this to be crazy, and then you got to turn out and there's the evil mastermind that you don't find out to the third one, and they all these, you know, trying to make me suspend my disbelief, but it ain't working.
Right. Speaking of making me suspend my disbelief and it not working, did you see Raw Monday night when Summer Rae apparently last week had proposed to Rusev and he was, if when I win a title, then I'll put some gold on your finger. And then the news breaks that he and Lana had got engaged. And then Monday night for them to try to explain how this happened.
So how did they? I did not watch Raw.
They did an awful. Remember my idea for how we should turn Rusev babyface?
Yeah.
Which was basically, and I think we used the Wyatts would be great for this.
Yeah.
That you take both of them off of TV because everybody knows they're a real couple. It's out there. So that wasn't a believable thing. Anyway, nobody bought it.
Yeah.
And you take both of them off TV because she's injured.
Yeah.
You have her make a return. You have the Wyatts threaten her. And then out of nowhere, and I'm not talking about play his music. I'm not talking about him come out waving a flag or him come out in his... I'm talking
street
about
clothes.
Street clothes with no music. He comes out and lays a beating on all three of the Wyatts for putting their hands on Lana.
Yeah.
Or not even, they don't even have to put their hands on her. You just back her up in a corner. And he comes out and he atones for the caveman behavior. And he holds the ropes for her and he gives her the cock of the walk and he lets her parade around the ring, and he raises her hand. He gets on his knee. He kisses her hand, whatever. And you make both, because there's such
a... I think
that
would have been great. I'm picturing that in my mind. I spaced out while you were telling that.
They're such a great act.
They are.
There's a natural, obviously because they're in love with one another.
Yeah.
There's a real chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah.
That
they tried to go against.
Right, that they tried to go against. And it's just this lightning in a bottle that is a great two-person act.
Yeah, I agree.
On the level, I believe, of Randy Savage and Elizabeth. I think
they could
have been that good.
Yes,
because
yes,
there's that real love, even more so with them, I think. Not that he's the worker that Savage is or anything.
Correct, but the emotional part of it.
Right, the emotional story is there to tell, and they went completely opposite of that.
Yeah.
And had Rusev get slapped by Summer Rae, which leads me to believe that that's like she's going to be berating him and Lana's going to come back and save Rusev. I'm not saying but that's what it looked like to me. She gets on the thing and she's like, I ask you, I've been wasting my time coming out here. And you're a liar and a cheater. Look at this. And then they show the picture of the two of them.
So what if they did this thing where over like a month or two, Summer Rae going out there with Rusev and just berating him, and he becomes almost a shell of himself.
Right.
And then Lana comes out and just, you know.
She beat Summer Rae up.
And Rusev kind of, that would be
that's completely opposite of what should happen.
Right. So what I would say is, to me, and you've done this so many times just with coming up with storylines, because there's something about Rusev and Summer Rae that is instinctive. And it's like Vince, whoever, or let me be like everybody else.
It's probably Kevin Dunn. Dunn said, but we ought not to do that.
Now, right.
Oh, idiots. Idiots. Get out. But it's like Vince's, who's had some of the best instincts in the history of the business.
But not lately.
Not lately. No. Yeah. I mean, you had it. You had the storyline. You had it right there. And it's like to completely go against that.
Right. There's such a great act. He had a great heel run. He had that great run with John Cena. And then he lost. And that was the time for him to go away.
Yeah.
And come back a babyface.
Yeah.
And they blew it. They split him up, put him with Summer Rae. Nobody believed that. Put Ziggler with Lana, and they had zero chemistry together.
They wasted their summer.
They did. They're clearly putting two people into storylines that they're not comfortable with. And sometimes you can't go against that. You know what I mean? Like, when two people are that much in love, you can't separate them on TV when everybody knows that in real life they're still in love with each other. And then, but for my opinion on this is Lana and Rusev should have cared enough about the wrestling business and the storylines not to be all over social media snapping pictures of themselves. You know what I
right.
mean?
Right. I agree. You talk about instinct. To me, it's right there. And again, the only part of Raw from Monday night, the 12th, October 12th, that I watched was the Reigns promo. Because it was panned so. By
the way, the first Raw that I watched, because I didn't even watch the one after Night of Champions.
Yeah.
By the way, I just wanted to throw that out there. So I decided I need to watch Raw because I hadn't watched it in a while. We got a pay-per-view coming up. Because I like the pay-per-views. That's when the.
Correct.
You know, and if you don't watch the three matches that the people have leading up to the pay-per-view, it's a fresh match.
That's
when you get to the pay-per-view,
right.
You know?
So true. So true.
And it is. They wrestle three or four times before the pay-per-view. And by the time the pay-per-view gets here, who cares? I don't care.
Yeah.
I've done seen them wrestle four times. I know what they're going to do. But if you don't watch Raw, it's a fresh match to you.
Yeah. Instinctively, I think everybody would know, hey, Roman Reigns is not our best promo guy. And him cutting a promo is not the way to... We need to get Roman Reigns over. We want to get Roman Reigns over. Let's give him a mic, not just on Raw, but also it'll come out tonight on SmackDown. He does another promo that was universally panned by people in attendance.
Really?
And again, the instincts of this person can do this and this person can't, that's like those instincts aren't there. I mean, you've got 50 people on the roster, 49 of them could have cut a better promo than Roman Reigns. You did not put Roman Reigns, I don't want to dice, you did not put, your job as the promoter is to put your people in a position to succeed, to
getting fired up over there.
But they're not, like, because they're just not doing it. They're putting them, people in the exact position, the worst position.
Yeah, to fail. They're putting them in a position where they can't possibly succeed.
And the ratings are showing that. And yes. I think the ratings going down, clearly, the Monday night football game, good gravy, was maybe one of the best Monday night games in history. Came down to the final play with the Steelers and the Chargers.
But I think, there again, I don't buy that Monday night football and basketball finals and all. If your product's good, that doesn't matter.
True. Very true.
It doesn't, man. Because I don't remember during the Attitude Era people going, well, it probably would have been better if it hadn't been for Monday night. No, they were beating Monday night football.
Yeah.
Because it was that good.
They were beating everything.
You had two companies together.
Yeah.
Just destroying the ratings.
Because to me, the Attitude Era, it didn't matter who you gave a microphone to. There was nobody, like during the Attitude Era, it didn't matter who came out. You were happy to see him.
And there was a sense on both shows, because we give WWE a lot of credit. I don't think we give WCW the credit they deserve because we buy into that narrative that they weren't any good.
Right.
They were good. And people were hot about what they kept doing the same thing over and over again was the problem.
Right.
Much like WWE's doing today, they kept doing everything over and over again. But there was that feeling that I have got to watch these shows because I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know when Stone Cold's going to be there and he's going to do something. But last week, he took concrete and he poured it inside of a Corvette. What's he going to do this week?
Because
a month ago, he drove a Zamboni down to the ring and jumped off the top of it. Or he drove a beer truck. I don't know what Steve Austin's going to do tonight. I got to watch it. And I got to see what he does. Or somebody's going to jump and join the NWO.
Yeah.
I got to tune in and watch. Because I used to, because I worked, as you may know, I'm a working man.
Yes.
And I have always been a working man. And
name I'm, tag and proud of
name
it.
Name tag and all. I literally wear a blue collar. Okay.
Yeah.
So I had to work. And I would set the VCR up. This is how long ago this is, because they showed the replay of Nitro. I would set my VCR up to tape Raw, and then I would have it where it would switch over and record the replay
of Nitro.
Yeah. And, I mean, I couldn't wait till Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
When I could sit out, when I got off work, I'd watch Raw. And then when I got off work the next day, I'd watch Nitro. you couldn't miss it. And now
you can.
What did I say? You can. I skip 3 or 4 weeks of Raw, so I don't see the matches the three times that they wrestle. I just see it at the pay per view.
So let's go back to something you just said, because I think it was very telling, and I don't even know if you caught what you said.
I catch everything.
We're talking about a wrestling show.
Uh-huh.
But when you were talking about the must-see moments, it was a beer truck, a concrete truck, somebody, all the things that had nothing to do with wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if now we're all wanting wrestling.
I don't think that we are. I think we think that we are.
Well, we want good. Whatever it is, we want it to be good, and it's not.
That's it. I think what we want is compelling angles to set up good matches, because that's what would happen. You didn't always get the great matches on Raw. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you did. Sometimes you had a great match. Sometimes Mick Foley won the world title for the first time from The Rock.
Yeah.
Okay, but you had these great angles that set up great matches at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
There was always a payoff.
Right.
And there's no payoff now because it never stops. It's Kevin Owens and Cesaro, and then next week Kevin Owens and Cesaro, and then next week Kevin Owens and Cesaro, and then when we get to the pay-per-view, Kevin Owens and Cesaro.
Yeah.
And they've traded wins back and forth, and nobody's elevated from it.
Yeah.
They're right in the same spot.
And I don't really know why they're fighting.
Yeah. And then they go do dinner of table for three together. Which, have you watched, by the way, on the WWE Network?
I watched a little bit. No, I have not. Good or no?
Oh, it's great. It is great. I love it. Like, I would recommend anybody watch the table for three with the New Day. Because that's the best episode of it.
Really?
It's incredible, man. The chemistry between and the real friendship between the three of those guys, it's just great, man.
Have you watched the one with Sting and Vader?
I started it, but DDP? I haven't. Yeah, I started it, but I haven't finished it yet, because we actually started it yesterday, and then Crystal got home. We were going to go out and get some supper, so I cut it off. But the New Day one is great. Like, those guys have their real personalities and how funny they are. I mean, I laughed the entire episode just the way, because they do the whole the way I mess with you about stuff, they just kind of sit at the table and do that. They're just like picking at each other, and like, they know what each other's hot button stuff are, and they'll say little things and just to kind of dig up under one another's skin a little bit. And it's that, oh man, why are you trying to say that about it? And they just, I mean, you just laugh the whole time. But then you also talk about Xavier Woods having this idea, and they talk about the genesis of the New Day idea, and how if you remember the original vignettes, where it was, and when I was
like a choir,
I was critical of it. Boy, they love church and their mamas, and they even kind of talked about, like, it was eye rolling to them. They didn't come out and say it, but like, we had this idea, and they were ready to go with it, but they kind of wanted to do it their way, and we knew we just kind of had to get through that part so we could get our real personalities out there.
Yeah,
and how they wanted to bring Kofi Kingston in, but Kofi was kind of reluctant to do it because he had his spot.
Yeah.
He had that Kofi Kingston spot that we've talked about.
Right.
I'm making $250,000, $300,000 a year. And yes, I'm not main event in WrestleMania, but I can go out and I beat Randy Orton once a year, and I get my spot in the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And he knew that he was
safe.
He was safe.
Yeah.
And he knew that, and how big of a leap of faith it was for him to abandon that and come on and join up with them. And then how they started out, they wouldn't listen to their ideas. Like, it was, okay, we're going to let you do it, but you're going to do it our way. And then it evolved now to there we're at the point where, okay, you guys just do what you want to do.
Are these like WWE-sanctioned shoot interviews, in a sense?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Basically,
they're embraced. I love it. So,
and they just, and it's like they just pick three people and they sit down and have dinner together. And the New Day one, and I'm telling you, if you watch it, you will not regret it. It's only like 22 or 23 minutes long. Yeah. They're not long. But they're great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really good show. It's what I wanted the WWE Network to be.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
That's awesome to hear you say that.
It's a great show. And,
I mean, can I just say that, like, it is when you, like, for me, when you watch something that gets you excited and makes you happy, like, that makes my day. Because
I'm so negative.
No, because
you don't smile that much, Mark.
Because you have a standard for wrestling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's few and far between when WWE meets that standard with you.
Yeah, it is.
And so I do think it's a huge deal.
Yeah, I'm clear with you. I don't get my wrestling fix from WWE. I have the WWE Network to watch old stuff.
Yes.
And I watch that. Like, I'm another episode of Table for Three that I really enjoy. You would think it would be the Roddy Piper, Gene Okerlund, and Paul Orndorff one, but I've heard most of their stories.
Right.
The stories that they told, I've already heard. Piper told the story about the car wreck when they tased Bob. And I've heard a thousand times. I've heard Piper tell that story.
Yeah.
But they do tell a good story about Paul Orndorff's Halliburton. That's worth going back and watching that. But the episode with Ryback, Daniel Bryan, and Dolph Ziggler is also great.
Really?
Because it's the same way. Like, it's Daniel Bryan just mercilessly picking on Ryback, and it's amazing because Ryback's like, he's sitting at the table,
yeah,
and you've been to eat with me,
yeah,
he's got that look where he's like, he's got his arms on the table and he's halfway across the table, almost blocking the other two out of the camera,
yeah,
and they're just like picking on this big guy, and little bitty Daniel Bryan is just like telling these stories, and he like said, Ryback talks about how he finally had to quit riding with Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes because they just picked on him all the time. And he's like, you're like, dude, you're bigger than both of those guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they like, apparently Ryback is like me. It doesn't take much to set him off. And they were just constantly like needling him to set him off. Like, it was funny to them to get him to that point where he was like, ah, you know what I mean? Where he was ready to go nuts.
So you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
So they do it like all the time. And he's like, I had to quit riding with him because I was like, they just keep me jacked up all the time.
Yeah. So my
episode too, great. The Divas one's really good with Medusa and Ivory and Molly Holly is really good.
I didn't know they had that many of them on there.
Yeah, there's like five or six episodes.
Huh? So my question to you would be, and is obviously these Table for Threes expose the business. I mean, that's not a good. So where is? But to me, that's what the network's for. The network's not your mainstream. Network's for people.
I think if I you're know buying, where you're going with.
If
this.
You're buying the network, you're in on the joke.
First of all, it's not a joke.
I'm sorry.
Don't ever say that it's a joke. That offends people who are in the business.
I'm sorry.
But I know what you mean. And it is weird because, like, why do you have a problem with Lana and Rusev posting their pictures on TMZ, but you don't have a problem with Sting and Vader sitting down and talking about their feud? And I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah.
Of why am I offended when Chikara does a slow motion spot and I'm not offended when they do it in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a hypocrite. I don't know. I don't know why. But I think it's because they keep them separate.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
During the context of the wrestling show, I don't want to see Lana and Rusev on screen while Summer Rae and Rusev are in the ring. But when I'm watching Table for Three, first of all, they're not really picking people who are feuding with each other. Well, I take that back because they did have Kevin Owens, Cesaro, and Dean Ambrose did a Table for Three.
Was that one good?
Have you watched? It's good. It's good. But like, to me, the New Day one and the Ryback and the Vader and Sting and DDP one is kind of – there's some – I don't know. There's like some real tension there.
Yeah.
On it. Like Sting talked about how Vader hurt him one time. And Vader's like, well, remember the time you took the strap and slapped me across the head and it busted my eardrum? He's like, why is it that every time Vader hurts Sting, he's a bad guy, but Sting hurt Vader and that's no big deal?
Yeah.
And then like DDP and Sting had kind of like a real tussle in the ring one time.
Yeah.
And they talk about that, like, but they're not like mad about it, but you can just tell there's still these, you know, and that's that working stiff thing, you know what I mean? You work stiff with each other. Sometimes there's real animosity there.
So that this where we're at gives me a good segue going into what I want to talk about next, because a couple Wednesday nights ago you had the NXT. Respect show,
right.
main event for a WWE show, NXT, Sasha and Bayley for the NXT women's title.
In a Iron Man match.
In an Iron Man, 30-minute Iron Man match that I haven't been able to see yet, just a few clips.
Don't let that stop you from talking about it. It never has before.
What I want to talk about, and then I want you to talk about the match, but we're talking about this people feuding and storylines. But at the end of the match, this you guys commented this on the group. You didn't like the handshaking, the hugging, the flowers, some of that stuff.
I actually, their match from the Brooklyn special was better.
Okay.
To me, it was a better match than the Iron Man match.
All right.
And that was the one when I had the issue, when all four of them got in the ring. But it doesn't surprise me that Triple H would be okay with that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like for him to say, oh, I know you guys are feuding, but yeah, y'all can go down there and hug and embrace each other, because that's what he did with his buddies in Madison Square Garden. So he doesn't see anything wrong with that.
But what I would ask, okay, is I think especially in the context of this, of the Bayley Sasha thing, that they weren't really presenting it as these. Okay, these two people don't like each other. It is who's the best,
right? There is that. I mean, like they had their match at the Brooklyn Takeover,
yeah,
and then they did the sign of the. And I have no problem with two people having a hard fought match and then shaking hands and saying you earned my respect,
right? And okay?
I got no issue with that,
right?
And they actually from that, I know you're going to talk about it, but you didn't watch it, so let me talk.
No.
They actually, from that, went with Sasha and Bayley kind of had a few promos where they talked about having respect for each other. So I got no problem with that. And then we get to the match from Respect, and it starts out as a respectful match. And then Sasha Banks, you know, shows her true colors throughout the – and makes a little girl cry in the front row.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree very often with Bruce Mitchell. He thought that was awful that they made that little girl cry. And I'm not saying – I don't think that – there were some things that Sasha Banks did that I'm not sure she should have done. Like, I think she went and snatched a bow off the little girl's head.
Yeah.
And I don't think she should have done that.
Yeah.
I think that took it too far. But to have somebody emotionally invested in the match enough to cry over their hero getting beat up, especially knowing that the hero is going to prevail at the end. And she did what I said I thought Triple H should have done a few months ago when she made the boo-boo face and rubbed her eyes, and she did all that at the little girl.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. Like, I think if somebody's emotionally invested enough to cry,
that's what
don't ruin the illusion for them.
Yeah.
Maybe she took it a little too far with some of the stuff she did, but that's what heels do. They're bad people.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the match, really, they didn't like hug or embrace. They just, everybody come out on the stage and they gave them flowers, I guess, and saying, hey, great. It's great that you guys main evented a WWE event for the first time.
Yeah.
Even though Trish and Lita main evented Raw one time.
Right.
The thing that's strange to me is it says a lot about how bad wrestling is that everybody's all over these women's matches.
Yeah. I agree.
Because it's a strange thing to see everybody care so much.
Right.
About it. Like, not since I can remember when All Japan Women was getting hot and people were going, you need to watch this. And the matches were a lot better than the NXT women's matches.
Yeah.
And especially a ton better than the main roster matches. But but they were better than the matches that you see on NXT. So it's just weird to me that everybody's all into Bayley and Sasha Banks and stuff. I don't get it.
Right.
I don't understand it. And I'm not trying to be misogynistic when I say it.
No.
My friend, or our friend, Victoria, even said herself, when you see the women throwing up the Four Horsemen sign, you need to stop because you ain't never going to be the Four Horsemen.
Right.
You were not. So you need to stop trying to be.
Yeah.
you're not that good. None of them are that good.
No.
There's not a one of them as good as Arn Anderson was.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Speaking of, there's a new tag team in NXT. God, I can't remember their names. I wish that I could.
Mm-hmm.
They wrestled Samoa Joe and Finn Balor on the...
Dash and Wilder?
Okay, yeah, yeah. They're awesome. They remind me of Arn Anderson, the way they come out with the satin jackets, and they got like this old school vibe about
They're from Anarchy. Franklin Dove, who used to own Anarchy Wrestling, who actually lives in Florida now, goes to about every... He's great friends with those guys. I mean, they're like almost family.
Right.
And just those guys are... I love it, man.
It's such a great gimmick, that 80s wrestler. I don't know if that's what they're going for. I think it is. But the satin jackets and the kind of the Arn Anderson haircuts, I think it's great, man.
Yeah.
I love those guys. And I want to see them. Like, I want to start following them.
Yeah. The... you know, my whole deal is if they're trying to present a match, if they're trying to elevate it and be like, man, this is a real sport, then in other real sports, when the game's over, you shake hands with your opponent, there's that show of respect. And so I don't think if Magnum T.A. and Tully Blanchard had shook hands at the end of the I Quit match, I probably would have vomited.
Yeah.
That's different.
Right, right.
But if it's like, because I think there's a difference between a blood feud and a respect feud. Am I right or wrong?
I agree with you.
Like I said, I haven't... what does that say about wrestling? That because, man, everybody, you would have thought we landed on the moon again after this match.
I agree.
That's everybody the greatest thing I've ever seen.
First of all, if that's the greatest thing you've ever seen, then I don't know what kind of wrestling you've been watching.
Right.
And I'm not saying it wasn't good, but we do need to get to a point where every time two women have a match, we stop saying it's the best women's match we've ever seen. I mean, because it ain't. I've seen Manami Toyota wrestle, so it ain't the best women's match I've ever seen. Just the way it is.
Right.
There's none of them. I'm not saying they couldn't get in the ring and go with her, but, you know, she's better than all of those girls. She just is.
Yeah.
Or was. I mean, I think she still has an occasional match. So if you really like women's wrestling, go to YouTube and look for Manami Toyota. And golly, man, if you think Sasha Banks and Bayley had a good match, You'll
some of that Japanese stuff is just incredible.
Yeah.
I want to change again. I think this is a good segue to move in and talk about PWG's Battle of Los Angeles. So it's clear today that in wrestling, very little of it, and you hear a lot of veterans talk about this, very little of wrestling now is called in the ring.
Right.
Much more choreographed than it was when we grew up. So my question is, if I go to a movie and I see a Jackie Chan movie or the Transporter movies with Jason Statham, I love those fight scenes, you know? They're well choreographed, okay?
Right.
I feel like sometimes that's what I'm getting with wrestling.
You're simply
following a template, a script, that there's really no spontaneity, not a lot of creativity.
Right.
That you've got everything pre-planned out.
Right.
And you just, it's almost like a concert where.
Make sure you're standing here at the right time because that's when I'm going to hit the spotlight.
Right. And it's almost like, I remember one time watching, they were doing like a Britney Spears highlight on like Entertainment Tonight. And she was dancing and they were trying to say, boy, she's lip syncing. And I said, yeah, she's lip syncing. You can't dance like she's dancing.
Right, and still and not sing. Be out of breath. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I said, if she was really singing, it'd be like, yeah. You know? So, I don't know. So, yeah.
I think I know what you're saying because it's like, okay, the Bola was three nights.
Yeah.
The first night was a little over 2 hours.
Yeah.
Second hour was a little over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And the third night was over 3 hours.
Yeah. Well over 3 hours. Yeah,
I mean, almost 4 hours.
Yeah.
So let's just say conservatively it was the first two were, you know, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, about 8 hours worth of wrestling.
Yeah.
Probably. And I usually get the PWG show. For those that don't know, they run a show about once every month and a half or 2 months.
Yeah.
And then they sell the DVD.
Yeah.
And I get the DVD and yeah. I watch it. I pass it on to you. And it's like 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Right.
And it's always a good show.
Yeah.
But you're right. After sitting down over the weekend, like I kept the DVDs in the DVD player. And when I sit down to watch the TV, I would just watch a match. Because I don't, like I'm trying to reach a point in life where I'm more active. I'm not just sitting and watching right. and things like that. But like I made a point to watch. And then when I got to the final stage, it's two discs. It's a four disc set.
Yeah.
So when I got to the last disc, it was like 2.5 hours and it was Sunday night. And I said, you know, I'm just going to finish watching this thing. So I pressed play. And by the time I got to the end, I had that feeling.
Yeah.
That, man, this stuff's so choreographed.
Yeah.
You know, not that it's not good. I mean,
right.
for choreographed spot fest wrestling, nobody does it better than Pro Wrestling Guerrilla.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct.
But after watching that much of it, I wanted to watch Magnum T.A. and Tully Blanchard
yeah.
in a cage.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how I felt. Now I need to watch some old wrestling, some storytelling in the ring, not just a video game.
Yeah.
But yeah. with that being said, the Bola was a great yeah. event. I mean.
So it was three nights. Mm-hmm. One thing, I think this was the 11th one, okay? What I love about PWG is they've done 11 of these, and the format's been a little different every year.
Right.
This, I think, was the biggest one ever. 24 guys wrestling, got down to three, and then the final match was a triple threat elimination match.
Right. And there's a lot that led up to it if you had to watch previous shows to get why.
Right. You know. And it wasn't just a tournament. There were other matches in there. As well, Super Dragon.
Where they advanced some big storylines.
Right, right.
Like where you're going to see, they had the Super Dragon who came back, who's a staple, and I've talked about him
yeah.
before. He's a staple. He's one of the owners of the company. Anyway, comes back, reforms the
Mount Rushmore
yeah. 2.0 with the Young Bucks and Roderick Strong, and they have a guerrilla warfare match, which leads Quicksilver, who he got attacked at the last show by Super Dragon, to
yeah.
come down, and now Quicksilver is going to get him a team together. And
right.
he was like, who should I have on the team? And I think I know who it's going to be, but I'm not sure. I feel like Chris Hero is probably going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that everybody was chanting, Chris Hero ain't nothing to, you know, blank
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
Which is a great chant, you know what I mean? I
yeah.
love Chris Hero. He's
yeah.
he's the indie darling of all indie darlings because
yeah.
he went to NXT and refused to change.
Yeah.
And he was Cassius Ohno.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that they want. CM Punk wanted to be in the Shield instead of Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And he just, his attitude was, no, I'm good at what I do and I'm not changing anything about it just so I can have this contract. And they let him go.
Yeah. And a lot of it was about his look.
Yeah, because he's not fat at all by no stretch. I mean,
he has an 80s wrestler's physique.
He does, and he's got a little gut that hangs over his trunk. But you're right, it's that 80s wrestling physique, and he's massive.
He's big.
I tell you who else was big that you don't see it in WWE, but I saw it, was Drew Galloway.
Yeah.
God, that dude's huge, man.
Yeah.
And you can't tell in WWE how big he was.
No, but at the PWG show in that 10-man match.
Yes.
And he is big.
He was a monster. And I don't think it's as much that he's big as that those other guys are built like toddlers.
And see,
somebody said that Bruce Mitchell actually said that the American Wolves are good, but they're missing something. And I went, yeah, they're missing something. A couple, 6 inches apiece and about 50 pounds. That's what they're missing.
When Tommaso Ciampa was in Ring of Honor, he was able to be that crazy guy because he was bigger than a lot of the guys.
Right.
He was in the ring at Bola with Drew Galloway, and it was like me and
Galloway's
you.
Galloway's like 6'7".
Yeah. Galloway's big in real life, but in TNA, he didn't tower. I mean, when we went to Bound for Glory, I definitely don't want to get into that. We might have to say that
for
now.
We are
going to
get into Bound for Glory.
I want to save that.
Yeah, we're going to finish the Bola talk.
My question about Bola, and I wrote it down here, and you just said it. Do all these guys at some point, does it all start running together?
The storylines, you mean?
No, I'm talking about this guy looks like this guy, and this guy does kicks, and that guy does kicks, and everybody's doing kicks, and everybody's doing knee strikes, and everybody's slapping each other, and everybody's doing a flip. And what I saw, because there's some of the moves, the athleticism on the Bola is like nothing I've ever seen. These guys are doing things. And when I say athleticism, I'm talking about a guy like Tommy End, who's not a small guy.
No. Or Chris Hero diving over between ropes.
But I'm not even talking about the dives. I'm talking about Tommy End, the succession of quick moves where you do a power move, you're picking a guy up, you're immediately on the top rope jumping on him, and as soon as you land, you're picking him up again. That in 30 seconds, you have hit three finishers at super speed.
Right.
And it's almost too much for your senses.
It really is
to take in.
Because I'm like, when you said, hey, I thought you wanted to do a whole show about the Bola when I got your text the other day. And I was thinking, I wish I had thought to write some stuff down, because I would have, and I could have talked in depth about each match. But I didn't write anything down, and they all kind of run together.
Yes. Yes.
There are things that stick out, but as far as like, wow, this was really cool or that was really cool, Chris Hero and Timothy Thatcher had a really, really good match.
Right.
And it was a hard-hitting match. Jack Evans had I knew what was going to happen. If you've seen Jack Evans, he is the vanilla midget of all vanilla midgets.
He is.
You know what I mean? He's a little bitty guy.
Yeah.
He had to wrestle Brian Cage.
Who is a beast.
There's only one reason I can think of why he ain't in WWE.
Right.
And I'll leave it at that. Because his physique is exactly what they're looking for.
And he can work. He can work.
He can move in the ring. And he's bigger than Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So there's only one reason I can think of why he's not in WWE.
Pick up.
And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anybody's doing anything because I don't know.
Right.
But he has this match with Jack Evans who runs him down like, you ain't going to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then Brian Cage just...
It's a squash match.
And I knew as soon as he started the promo where they were going with this. And I love when they do this because these matches... work if they're done by two guys who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
He squashes this guy. And then Jack Evans, or Brian Cage really slips on a banana peel.
Yeah.
You know, and bam, Jack Evans gets the win. And it's the big upset of the tournament.
Yep.
He shouldn't have won that match. Brian Cage was a favorite to win, and it was a shocking moment, and it was done really well.
It was.
And then did you watch the Evans and Chris Hero match?
Yes.
Where Jack Evans said, you're not even going to get a two count on me. Did you watch the match, or you just say you watched the match?
I'm in the same position as you. I watched three or four hours of this over the last 2 days.
I watched all of it.
Right. Well, there you go.
There again.
That's what you do.
That's always been the difference.
That's your gimmick.
You have no problem talking about something that you ain't watched. I feel like I watched it.
I know.
Okay, well then let me allow me since I did watch it. Jack Evans told Chris Hero, "You won't even get a two count on me, much less a three count." And he hit him with every power move he had, and Jack Evans kicked out on one.
Yeah.
Everything. And when he finally got a two count on him, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was almost, well, not almost, it was too much.
Yeah.
The thing about wrestling crowds, no matter how smart they think they are, they're not that smart.
Right.
And there was a Shawn Michaels Diesel match one time where they had to be really careful because Diesel was the babyface and Shawn Michaels was the heel. But you have to be really careful about beating down the little guy.
Yes.
And it happened in that match where all of a sudden Jack Evans, regardless of what he'd said about everybody, regardless of everything, he became the babyface in that match. And people started cheering for him kicking out because he showed so much heart.
Yeah.
And it happened in that match because I don't know about their wrestling IQs, but sometimes you have to know when to not do
that. Yeah.
Because it turned Chris Hero heel.
Yeah.
And it made Jack Evans the babyface before the match was over with because they went too far with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was, when Shawn Michaels and Diesel would do that, they made sure to have those moments when Shawn Michaels would make a comeback and do something dirty and underhanded.
Right.
Before
right.
Nash took back over. So you would understand, no, he's the bad guy. He's not the underdog here. He's getting what's coming to him.
Wasn't there a point in that match where Chris Hero kicked out at one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There was. Yeah, there were a few times.
Part of the deal was when I was watching it, I think if I'd have had headphones, I could have heard it a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I was watching it on my computer, and I really could not hear the promo. Right. I couldn't hear what Jack Evans was saying.
Right.
Now, Jack Evans and Helico are both in this tournament, and they are from, and all along with Ricochet, who, for some of you who don't know, that's Prince Puma.
Right.
They're,
and Drago,
right,
part of the tournament.
But they're all from Lucha Underground.
Pentagon Jr.
Yes.
Phoenix and Aerostar
were
all on the show. And they all, like, they had a great Lucha match where, like, Drago and Pentagon Jr. took on Aerostar and Phoenix. And, I mean, that was a real – I'm such a huge fan of Pentagon Jr. Like, if you didn't see the Lucha Underground finale, Ultima Lucha, when he and Vampiro had the match, and he had been trying to threaten Vampiro, and it turns out Vampiro was his mentor all along. It was one of the great moments of the whole deal. I'm a huge Pentagon Jr. fan.
Yeah.
He just looks evil.
Yeah.
His whole get up and the breaking the arms of his opponents and stuff. But, I mean, all four of those guys – were like an integral part of every day. They kind of were involved in different things that were going on. They had matches against each other. They had matches against other people. And it, like, I can't say enough good about those guys.
Was it the I think it was some of the quarterfinal matches where they all started out very fast, guys trying to get quick wins. And they kept pointing out, it's like, hey, these guys are going to have to wrestle three times tonight.
Right.
And they're trying to
Get it over.
I thought the announcers did a really good job of kind of getting that.
And they made a big deal about it.
Yeah. Like,
winning this is a big deal.
Yeah.
They made a big deal about it. And that's good. That's what you should do.
So the final match is Speedball Mike Bailey.
Who you just you have to have been watching every PWG show to understand that this guy just shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Nobody knew who he was, and he looks like a nerd.
He does.
And he walks to the ring like a nerd, and he wears
Karate Kid.
Right. He's the Karate Kid, and that's his gimmick. He wears the gi. He gets in the ring, and he bows, and he does all this karate stuff. Like, this, he's a karate nerd.
Yeah.
And you think, well, this guy's going to suck.
Yeah.
And then he starts wrestling, and everybody starts getting – like, even, I saw his first match in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and nobody expected him to do anything because the way he looked, and he had this great – I forget who it was against, but he has this great match.
Yeah.
And then people started to get behind him, and then he beat Chris Hero.
Yeah.
Chris Hero is the guy, which I want to, and we'll get to it here in a minute, but I want to talk about how much I like Chris Hero.
Yes.
Because he does.
I'm so glad you said that, because I want to talk about that too.
Okay. Well, then let's just go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So he beats Chris Hero.
Yeah.
Who is kind of like the heart and soul now of WG. He's that guy, like we just talked about.
He's like the measuring stick.
Right. He's the, you know, I don't want to say the John Cena, but that's the comparison I'm going to use because it's important. John Cena does the open challenge. He comes out and he, you know, whatever. He puts over Kevin Owens without putting him over.
Right.
He puts over Neville without really putting him over. And he does, you know, a couple of different, Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Hero actually puts these guys over.
Yeah.
Like, they beat him.
Yeah.
And then he gets on the microphone and tells them that they earned his respect.
Yeah.
And that the fans should respect him and this and that. You know what I mean? And it's just, like, he genuinely is giving back.
It's refreshing.
It is. It's great to see somebody give back to this company.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say enough good things about
it. Yeah, and I can't remember if it was the show before this or the one, but I watched the Bayley and Chris Hero match.
It's
a David and Goliath because of the size difference.
Uh-huh.
Mike Bailey's the Rudy of PWG.
He is, and I think that's what. But you can get behind that guy, like he's
because
he looks like a door.
His tights look like pajama bottoms.
They do,
and he goes barefoot, but it's not bare feet because
he's got the kick pads over the
over his foot. Feet.
Yeah.
Real quick, I don't want to get too far off topic. I noticed that a lot of the guys in PWG, a lot of them don't wear wrestling boots. And I know we've talked about that before. Do you think that's because what they're trying to do, it's easier to do in the type of footwear they're wearing?
It could be. Like, I didn't realize till that show, because they took them off, that the Young Bucks wear tennis shoes.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't realize that.
So on the Too Sweet Journey, they talk about that.
Oh, really?
And they talk about why he wears.
I haven't got a chance to see that yet. I'm looking.
I'm sorry. I've got it at the house, and we'll pick it up. And
you would think with the 100 DVDs I gave you last year that maybe you could let me float the one you actually bought.
All right.
Never mind. You missed the setup for the joke. So
I don't think we need to go there.
No, you missed the setup, man.
Oh.
You were supposed to say, I pay you back in it.
Oh, sorry. Well, I do. But back to Chris Hero. Yeah, I mean, maybe his semifinal match. Just when he's being introduced, he does about six kick up.
Yeah, the kip up where he drops on his back, and he's a big boy. He's got to be 6'4", 6'5".
His athleticism is ridiculous.
It is, man.
It is just the things
When you look at him, he shouldn't be able to do the things that he does.
The things that these guys do in the ring now, simply put, the wrestling we grew up with, those guys could not do it.
Harley Race couldn't do that.
No. I mean, I think of Rick – when I think of 80s – best shape as far as look, I'm thinking Ricky Steamboat.
Right.
Ricky Steamboat couldn't give somebody a brain buster, be on the top rope in 2 seconds, give them a double boot stomp, then pick them up into another suplex or some move in 30 seconds.
Yeah, when they do the roll through stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, golly, those guys are incredible, man. But they all seem to – they have to do that because a lot of them lack personality.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There's something missing from all of those guys.
Yes.
And that is true. And I would say that about most of the guys. And as much as I love it, I mean, I love Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. It's my favorite. If I'm watching a show, I think that's what I want to watch, man. But most of those guys are missing one or two of the ingredients that you need.
Yeah.
And some of them, just like I said, are missing 6 inches and 50 pounds. I mean, that's what a lot of them are missing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, and that's the way it is. And
right.
I mean, some of them are 5'6" and
oh, yes,
140 yeah. pounds. I mean, they just are. I can't, yeah. That's God made them that way. Don't get mad at me.
Right. So we get to the finals, and we've talked about, and in the finals you have three guys that all look different.
Yes.
You had three pretty different styles. You had Mike Bailey, Chris Hero, Zack Sabre Jr.
Uh-huh.
Zack Sabre Jr.'s semifinal match is against the Villain.
The Villain. That's literally the Villain. Moniker of his.
And the great, and I think it was his first show in PWG, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember at the end of their match.
It was, because I guess why I can't. It's Marty something.
Marty Skrull.
The Villain, Marty Skrull.
So Zack Sabre goes for a pin and he kicks out, and Zack Sabre just looks at the camera and the ref's like, that's it. That's all the moves I know.
Yeah.
And he's just exhausted. And the announcers are talking about, man, you know, what's the name of this building? Well, we're just going to start calling it the Sweat Box.
Yeah.
And you can just, like, you can literally see the exhaustion.
Yeah.
So we've told you a little bit about Mike Bailey, told you a little bit about Chris Hero. Zack Sabre Jr. is an English guy. And submission specialist, has wrestled in Japan, has a little bit of that Japanese style. Really, I think of him as a taller, skinnier version of William Regal, perhaps.
That's probably, well, that's just because he wears British trunks. If he wore an Irish flag, you'd say he reminded you of Sheamus. So.
He would not remind. I'm talking about his wrestling style.
No, you're saying that because he wears British trunks.
Does he wear British trunks?
Yeah, he's got the. He's
oh,
got
that's
the,
right, the Union Jack.
He's got the Union Jack.
Which has been banned in parts of England.
Really?
Ridiculous.
Why?
Because it offends people. Hey, that's the world we're living in. Political correctness run amok.
I tell you what, you should talk to a German about flying flags.
Correct.
Before anybody starts questioning why they do that.
Yeah, so.
Talk to them. I'm telling you, I worked for a German company. Talk to them about why they only fly a flag one day a year.
All right.
If you ever see one, ask them why.
This match is great. Because you kind of have that Chris Hero, Mike Bailey. There's that deal there where Mike Bailey scored the upset against them before.
Uh-huh.
And then Zack Sabre's kind of the outsider.
I think, and if I'm wrong here, somebody tell me, because I don't remember, because I watched so much.
Yes, yeah.
Chris Hero had the match. His finger pops out of socket.
Oh, sometimes. That was, yes.
He had a match, I think it was with Zack Sabre
Jr. Yeah.
And so he had worked with both of those guys.
I forgot about that.
And so there was that history there. If you needed to be watching PWG, that match with his finger was disgusting.
Dude, the inside cover of the DVD is him looking at the finger that's at a right angle.
Right.
And
it wasn't broken. Something happened to it at some point and it pops out of socket. And that's pretty much what happened. It was popped out of socket, and they just went with it. But
what was great is Chris Hero and PWG used that to get from that last show.
Yeah,
used it to get Zack Sabre over as if this guy's not to be messed with.
Not so much so that I'll just go ahead and tell you. Spoiler alert: Zack Sabre Jr. won.
Yes,
the Bola, and I really thought that he would be the first one to get eliminated because Mike Bailey had beaten Chris Hero.
Yeah.
And that's that because I've been watching WWE too long. Somebody won, so the other guy's got to win. But I thought that was where they were going to go with it, that Sabre Jr. would go out and then we would get the Chris Hero, Mike Bailey rematch.
Now he did,
and
now,
then Chris Hero would win the bowl. That's what I thought was good. Because Chris Hero's on the cover of the DVD.
Yeah. Now Chris Hero does pin Mike Bailey for that first elimination. Yeah. Right. And this is these guys have already wrestled all twice that night. This is a 40-plus minute match.
And then the previous two nights. Yeah. And I'm talking about, if you go back and watch Timothy Thatcher and Chris Hero, that was a hard-hitting match.
Yeah.
And I think Meltzer gave it 4.5 stars.
Huh.
It's one of the higher-rated matches.
I need to go back and read. I just resubscribed to the Wrestling Observer.
I need to get me a. I'm thinking about canceling. Yeah, I'm thinking about getting me a, because I want the print copy in my hand.
Oh. Yeah.
Because I do the torch digital, and I don't ever read it.
Ah.
Because it's the I have to go digital. It's just way too. I don't know why I don't read it. I should, but I basically keep. And I told him this. I keep my torch subscription because I like Bruce Mitchell's show.
Yeah. This last three way match is just a great, great match. Oh, yeah, the ending is great.
The guerrilla warfare match from night two is good. The Angelico Jack Evans match, because they're tag team partners.
Yeah,
it is sports entertainment.
Yeah,
it is clear that it's two guys who are just like, hey, Meltzer's in the front row. Let's try to have, let's do every spot we know.
Right.
So it's kind of hard. It gets a little goofy at a couple of moments, but it's a good match. I mean, it's worth watching.
The end, they present Zack Sabre with the trophy, and he's so exhausted he can't even stand up. And Chris Hero acts like he's going to come back in the ring, and Zack Sabre's like protecting the trophy. Right. And Chris Sabre just gets on the mic and says, "You deserve this crap."
Right.
And it's just great. Talk about putting a guy over. And then Roderick Strong comes in, the champion, and just puts the challenge out there. It's like, hey, you think you're something? You won this. Well, the next show, I'm going
to
beat the crap out of
you. I can't wait to see that match.
That's going to be good.
Crappy little boots. He's he's good, man. And I got a lot of respect. We saw him Saturday night while we went to a Ring of Honor show. Oh, well, you were going to talk about it. Now I brought it up.
No, that's fine.
Now you know how I feel got it set up.
No, that's good.
So we were at a Ring of Honor show Saturday night when the Battle of Los Angeles was going on. And Roderick Strong wrestled Friday night, flew to Atlanta for the Ring of Honor show, and then flew back.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's pretty cool.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Pretty impressive.
The jet lag.
Oh, golly.
That must have been.
Cannot overstate the effect that jet lag has on the human
body.
As I
said to you yesterday, nobody's more of a expert on jet lag than a guy who went over one time zone and then turned around and come back and actually said to me with a straight face, "Sorry, I've got jet lag." Man goes to Alabama. So he drove through. You drove through one state. We're right here. On the Georgia line. Okay, you and me can be in Georgia in 15 minutes. From where we're sitting right now, and your house is just right down the road.
I think you're accusing me of overselling.
So we could be in Georgia.
Yep.
In less than 15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay? But Mark.
And you Mark, drove.
Through the whole state.
I drove through
the whole state on one breath.
What'd that take you? 2.5 hours to drive through Georgia. Maybe if you hit some traffic, 3.
I tried to avoid the traffic.
Okay. So then you go over to Alabama, which is just on the other side.
Listen.
And then that's where you get one time zone, so you lose an hour. And then you, like, 2 days later, you came back.
We're getting to our ceiling here on time.
No, we ain't getting nowhere near where nowhere.
Yeah, we are. We're getting to our ceiling.
Where we at?
I think everybody knows that jet lag is real and it's caused by human activity. And we have a moral responsibility to do something about it. So I think I speak for Mark on this.
But don't ever assume
you
speak for me.
When I say this, click on the banner. The banner on this episode is the Battle of Los Angeles from High Spots.
Did we have anything else to talk about? Because I've got a question.
I'm not done yet. I'm not wrapping up. I'm not wrapping anything up. You'll see where I'm going in a second. Now, let me just put this out there. This is not family friendly. This is not you're not going to sit down and watch Bola with your kids.
No. I mean, if a little bit of cussing offends you, then you don't need to watch it.
If
you're like me, I'd let my nephew watch it.
Right. You'd watch it with him, yes.
They're not out there blankety blankety blanket him, but when they get excited,
chants and things like that.
Yeah.
But this banner is going to be there up there. Our highest recommendation.
Yeah,
must watch.
Like I watch any pro wrestling guerrilla show you get to watch is going to be better than Raw.
Yes,
the production values are going to suck. guys are going to be in the ring cutting promos, and you might not necessarily be able to understand every word.
Yeah.
The lighting sucks. Sometimes a guy will go do a move off the top rope, and he'll hit the light that's hanging down.
Yeah.
The ring's got duct tape holding it together in the middle.
Yeah, and it's like in a church fellowship hall. It reminds me of the old Corinth Baptist.
Yeah, it's like an fellowship hall. That's exactly right. It's like an old fellowship hall somewhere. I think it's a VFW hall.
You mentioned
American Legion building.
You mentioned the slow motion, and is that what you wanted to talk about?
No. Well, that. But I've got a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
There's some things I want to talk about too.
Okay.
But if we need to break this into
what do you want to ask me?
I'm not ready to ask you yet. I want to talk about the slow motion.
Okay, talk about slow motion.
They did the slow motion spot.
Yeah.
It takes me out of it, man.
Especially when he does the thing with the thumb up the butt and then licks it.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Yes, it is.
And the chant is, you sick bleep, sick bleep.
Yeah. But at least it was well done. You know what I mean? Like, everybody looked like they were in slow motion, and the announcer was in slow motion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the crowd popped in slow motion. It takes me out of it. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But that's wrestling in 2000. There's nothing I can do to change that stuff, and I'm not going to be like some other, you know, famous managers from the 80s who piss and moan about it. I mean, what can you do? I mean, I can't change it. They're going to do what they're going to do. And I don't have to like it, but I'm not going to stop watching it because they do it.
Right.
I wish they wouldn't do it. I wish they'd take things a little more seriously, but
yeah,
it's at least it was a comedy match.
Yeah.
Anyway,
because it was a 10-man match.
Right. It was a 10-man. And it was kind of a comedy match. And it's not like they did it in the guerrilla warfare match with the intense hatred.
Right.
Which Trevor Lee was in, by the way. And Trevor Lee had a great show. And I thought he should have gone further in the tournament.
Yeah.
Personally. Because I think he's great.
Yeah.
And he may. I think I'm hoping that maybe by next year he'll.
I want to talk about. We won't be able to do it this episode. But
actually had his title shot, so that may be why he didn't.
When we talk about Bound for Glory, I want to talk about Trevor Lee, but I thought
we're fixing to talk about Bound for Glory.
Well, we need to save that for another episode.
Why?
Because we're
is it gonna cut off?
It's harder to edit once it gets to a certain point.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll talk about it at the beginning of the next episode.
Okay. But your question
had
to do.
That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. Yeah, I had some questions.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll just go right into that when we'll wrap this up. Any other thoughts on Battle of Los Angeles? Nope. All right. So the guerrilla warfare match was we talked a little bit about that, but there's a spot in there where Super Dragon comes off the top rope, and I don't get Super Dragon. And I think that's – I just don't get Super Dragon. I don't
– what don't you get? Because he's kind of sloppy.
Right.
His ring work's kind of sloppy.
Well, it's not just the ring work. Just the long sleeve T-shirt.
Yeah.
Dude is over.
Yeah, yeah. They love him.
But he comes off to a double stomp on somebody's chest. And it looks like – his left leg snaps off.
Yeah.
But then he rolls over, grabs it. He's legit hurt, but he grabs his right knee. And the announcers do a great job. They're like, maybe he's going in the back to get some weapons. But then they make a big deal of, man, this is a 3-on-4 match now. And I loved it that there's a point toward the end where they're doing the Young Bucks and Roderick Strong are doing a triple team move. And they're like, well, I know what's coming here. And he's like, oh, wait, no, I don't. And they do something completely where Roderick Strong suplexes one of the Young Bucks into a flipping splash onto the opponent.
Yeah.
And it was like, I have never seen that.
It was clearly – it's one of the most choreographed matches you'll ever see. But it's got some – there were so many spots where, like, you'd see Pentagon did a deal where he, like – had a guy, you know, I don't know what you call it, where you take the guy across your back and you're back to back and you pull his knees up under your armpits.
Yeah.
And you drape his arms over your shoulders and drop down onto your butt. What do you call that move? Bam. So he does that and he has a guy in a package pile driver at the same time. So when he drops down, he's doing two moves at once. I mean,
there's so many times that there's two guys standing on the top rope.
Yeah.
And
how more of those guys don't get injured, I'll never know.
Yeah. There's one match where they're out in the crowd and just break a bunch of chairs. I mean, unintentionally.
Yeah.
One guy wanted to talk about Tommy End, who is a Welsh? Not Welsh. Amsterdam?
I don't know. Maybe he's Irish. I don't know.
He's not Irish. He's from, I think he's from... He's not from the...
He ain't England. No. He ain't American. I can tell you that.
But he's got a very unique look. I've seen some of his matches in Japan. I was you know, interested to see his work here. He has a great match with Mike Bailey. I think that's in the quarterfinals. But again, to see the MMA influence, just the kicks and the strikes.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But like you said, after 6 hours of it, I don't need to see another guy get kicked in the head.
Right.
Some
of it is excessive, the stiffness and stuff. There's a lot. Yeah. PWG is all about excess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's they're the Young Bucks of wrestling promotion.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, let's just take it to ridiculous heights.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But it's not the... Right.
Yeah. But I like it. I mean, it's... You know, we ain't never going back to... Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. We ain't going back to that.
No. So, and, well, I'll be honest. I think everything is in cycles.
Yeah.
And I do think that sooner, like, I think somebody like that will come along that can have, because sooner or later, we're going to, these super speed video game matches are going to desensitize
us. Yeah, they're going to get played out. And so you're right. And somebody's going to come along and slow it down a little bit and tell a methodical story.
Maybe
everybody's going to go, wow.
Yeah, great. Right. And I think and get to a point of, hey, maybe we don't need to have every single move
right
planned out.
Right. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it generally goes...
You know what's strange is
I like it when you amuse yourself.
Is so when I preach, I don't preach from a manuscript. I don't have every word written out. I typically have an outline. I have my high spots, you know. Mm-hmm. And then as I'm preaching, I kind of know what I'm saying, fill in the blanks. A lot of preachers preach straight from a manuscript, and I find it, you know, the President Obama, typically speaks from a teleprompter, mm-hmm. and it can get old. Some of his oration is tremendous, one of the best speech givers we've ever seen, but he's reading. It's not, doesn't seem like it's from the heart. It's very scripted. Then you got, and this is not a political discussion, this is society's. Then you got somebody like Donald Trump, no teleprompter,
right.
Shoot from the hip, and everybody's loving him. And I'm saying, well, yeah, because they've had 8 years of just scripted, by the book, no emotion, and now you got this guy that's the exact opposite.
Right.
The policy's out the window.
You mean the guy that's married to an immigrant but doesn't like immigrants?
I didn't want to make this a political.
I'm not making it political. I'm just making a
statement. You're stating a fact. Was it his second? No, that was Marla.
Ivana was a... She had, because she didn't have an American accent. So
no, she did not. No, she did not.
I don't know if she was American or not, but I'm just saying, if you're going to marry an immigrant, maybe you don't run your mouths about immigrants.
That Donald
especially
Trump.
Especially when every one of us... Ask a Native American how they feel about illegal immigrants.
Donald Trump, that thrice married bastion of family values.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, but I think it goes to our wrestling as well, that I think there's that. I think when somebody comes along and doesn't seem so choreographed and it's a little bit more unscripted and a little bit more honest,
yeah.
authentic, that I think that'll And I feel that way about Kevin Owens a lot.
And I'll tell you the truth. I think that's probably why Mike Bailey has gotten over in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla like he has. Because he is a little different.
Yeah.
He is a little, you know, he doesn't look like all those other guys.
He does a move where, all right, so John Cena, if a guy's bent over, John Cena will do that leg drop off the top rope.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he does the double knee flip.
He does a flip to a double knee on the guy's back. I don't know how he hadn't killed somebody.
It looks brutal, man.
And then, but then they'll go right from a knockout
There's no stopping to let that sink in. And that is a criticism of that I would have of theirs.
Need to slow down.
I need to slow down. Slow a little more. They take that to new heights. That slowing down and selling stuff, it ain't going to happen in PWG.
Nah.
That's just not what they do.
When they slow down, like there's a part, the match we were talking about, I think it's Marty Scurll and Zack Sabre Jr., right very at the beginning of the match, they're getting ready to do a spot, and Marty Scurll just, they're in the middle of the ring, he's getting ready to sling in ropes, and he just has to, and he holds his hand up, and he just takes a deep breath, and is like, okay, I'm ready now. It's just like, because it was his first night there, and I think it's like baptism by fire. Right. That dude, you're in a whole, this is not like anything you've ever seen. This is full. And I think that's why Daniel Bryan, when he gets to WWE, if you go to a live show and you see Daniel Bryan run the ropes, he's running the ropes at a speed. Same thing with Dean Ambrose. They're running the ropes at a different speed than everybody else.
Right, yeah. And you can thank Daniel Bryan for a lot of his influence on independent wrestling.
Yeah.
When you watch that stuff, I mean, it's clear the influence that guy's had on independent wrestling.
Yeah.
Regardless of what Punk wants to say about how they're hiring guys like him, they're hiring guys like Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Not CM Punk.
Yeah. That's very, very, very true. Anyway, that we highly recommend Bola, not Ebola.
Ebola. You don't want that.
We do not recommend.
I don't recommend you trying Ebola on for sure. Ebola, I would definitely.
And if you click on the banner, the Bola banner, and it takes you to High Spots, all the Bolas, or most of the Bolas are on there through highspots.com. And
most of the PWG shows.
Just highly recommend all of them. Very good.
Yeah, they're good. It's good, man. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, if you like Ring of Honor, you'll like it.
Yeah. And some of you listening to this, it's not the wrestling you grew up with.
No. As a matter of fact, it's everything that you've probably heard me say I don't like about wrestling.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Yeah.
Same with the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
They represent everything I say I don't like, and I like them. So.
Yeah. And I think what won you over with the Young Bucks is they're making money. And they do everything they do to make money.
That and just kind of knowing their story.
Yeah.
You know, once I heard their story, I was like, okay, these guys, they built a wrestling ring in their backyard. And I mean, they just love wrestling and they played video games. And I mean, if I was 10 years, 15 years younger and I was wrestling, I'd be doing the same thing. You know what I mean? So I just don't hate them for they're taking the wrestling business in a different direction. And that's what there was a time when they were telling Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat they needed to slow down and sell more.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. There was a time they told Dick Murdoch and Harley Race they needed to slow down and sell more. And there was a time that somebody told Gorgeous George he didn't need to be worried about doing a gimmick. He needed to go out there in wool trunks. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just the way wrestling is. It evolves and it progresses. And
that's why we love it.
And that's why we love it. So this is where it's at now, and
yeah. Hey, if you listen to this and you have seen the Bola tournament, we would love your thoughts. We'd love your thoughts on the Bailey Sasha match and on the other things we talked about on this episode today. So you can find us on Facebook. Our group is The Wrestling You Grew Up With. Hey, just keep it clean and be nice and talk about wrestling. We'll all get along just fine. Go to the Double Dropkick Show page. Hit the like button if you haven't done so. That would be awesome. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Heath Mulliken.
At the DDK Show.
And, always great to talk to people on Twitter about wrestling. That's what we want to do. We just want to talk about wrestling. Whatever wrestling, whatever decade, We're not picky. Just going to talk about wrestling. And we hope you do too. So DoubleDropKick.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Hey, take a moment. Go on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Write us just a brief review. Take you 10 seconds. Just say, hey, this is the best show in the history of shows. That's all you got to do. So, as always,
tell me something I already know.
As always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.